This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Live younger, look younger, feel younger at GCNLife.com.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Okay, Nick Redfern, let's talk about that since we're talking about your forthcoming Area 51 book. It's going to be out right after the first of the year. Okay, with all the Russian stuff here, are you familiar with a book from James Carrion called The Roswell Deception as opposed to Rosetta Deception?
Yeah.
Okay, now we've asked James to come on the show. We haven't heard from him yet. But obviously he's thinking here, if we use the Rosetta Deception as an example, is that this is the early days of the Cold War. We want to spook the Russians. Is that the case with the Roswell book?
Well, to a degree, yeah. I mean, you know, when you look at the early years of ufology, you can find now evidence of sort of disinformation and trying to manipulate the Soviets. For example, I'm sure, Gene, you'll remember the story of the alleged UFO crash at Spitsbergen off Norway in 1952. You know that story, that one? It's an old story.
Sure. Anyway. It seems to get recycled now.
Yeah,
and about every 15 years or something, there's a UFO crash at Spitsbergen.
Yeah, exactly. Well, about 15 years ago, through the Freedom Information Act, I got some of the NSA's UFO files. Now, one of them is a transcript of a Russian newspaper article on UFOs. And the article mentions the Spitsbergen case, and somebody in the NSA has taken a black marker and circled it, and in big capital letters, they've written the word plant next to it, which is interesting. There are a lot of cases like this. For example, the CIA, back in the 1990s, prepared a historical document on the involvement of the CIA and the UFO subject. One of the things they said was that in the 1990s and 1980s, the CIA was deeply concerned that there was certain people in the defense community in the US who were possibly being used by the Russians to essentially give the Russians secret information on our defense projects. And in return, the Russians would give these people wild and, you know, sensational stuff on UFOs. But the CIA's concern was that because these people in the defense community had a pre-existing interest in UFOs, they were worried that these people would be turned. You know, they would give out sensitive information on aviation projects, and in return, the Russians, the KGB, would give them, you know, these sensational UFO documents, etc. But it would be fabricated material. So the Russians would get real U.S. secrets on defense projects, and the UFO researchers would get nothing but disinformation and lies and fabricated documents. So one of the stories that I was told for the book was an outgrowth of that, namely, that U.S. defense and intelligence agencies were concerned that the Russians were trying to penetrate Area 51. They were certainly flying satellites over, and there was a fear that the Russians might find out and find the location and the names of some of the employees and approach them, you know, for in this kind of situation of you give us this, we'll give you that. And they decided to, U.S. intelligence decided to essentially try and reel in these Russian spies by giving them information on allegedly real UFO activity going on at Area 51, because the Russians could not basically walk away from this in the event it was true. It'd be so sensational. And so they started asking questions, but they were being watched at every time. And what happened was that, you know, these Russian spies were captured, taken into custody, and the only thing that had happened was that, you know, U.S. intelligence had crafted some bogus documents to reel them in on UFOs. So you could make a case that some of the stories coming out of Area 51 in relation to UFOs are actually disinformation and counterintelligence ploys to try and reel the Soviets in and then grab them, you know, before they have a chance to do anything else.
I wanted to ask you about Bob Lazar, because his story seems to be so peculiar. Some things may be real, some things may be fantasy. Is he a put-up job?
Well, if he is, I don't think he's like a witting one or a knowing one. For example, Stan Friedman. Stan thinks that Bob Lazar is just a total fraud. You know, he actually said, I'm quoting him accurately right now, Stan said that Lazar's story is, and I quote, bunk, 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 three times. That's what Stan said. The fact is, though, that there are some genuinely odd and intriguing aspects to the story. Now, according to Lazar, who actually did work on a number of significant and controversial and secret defense programs in the early 1980s, he actually worked at the Los Alamos labs for a while because his name and contact info is actually in the facility's telephone book. That's a fact. That's not rumor. That's an absolute fact. Now, on top of that, according to Lazar, he met in the early 1980s, he met Edward Teller. Teller was giving a lecture at the facility where Lazar was working at the time, and they sort of struck up a brief conversation because Teller was reading a newspaper which had an article on the front about Lazar. This is back in 82 when Lazar was building jet cars, and the local newspaper had a front page story on Lazar, and that's true as well. That's a fact. Teller said, "Well, this is really interesting. This is you." And Lazar said, "Yeah." And so they had a chat, and then a few years later, according to Lazar, Teller, clearly having remembered him, recommended him for a project that he might find interesting, to say the least. And that supposedly was how he got the interview to get the job out at Area 51. Now, when the Teller angle came out, you would imagine if someone like Edward Teller was being misrepresented by this sort of maverick scientist saying he got me this job out there and I wouldn't have seen the UFOs had it not been for that. You can imagine how someone like Teller would have done something about that or said something about it. What he actually did, he said something along the lines, and this is almost word for word, he said, "Well, I don't remember him, but if I did remember him, I might have recommended him for a job, but I don't remember him, so I can't remember if I recommended him for a job." And it was almost like lawyer speak, you know, he'd been coached to make a specific statement. Teller would not say that it was all garbage, it was all nonsense. And he wouldn't even say that, or he wouldn't even deny that he hadn't met Lazar. He just said, "I don't remember, I can't remember," which is something we hear so much today, you know, in the news with politicians. So, you know, he did hold the positions he claimed to have held.
Or did he? I mean, you know, the thing is, okay, what about all of his other credentials? That would be a lot more difficult to get rid of. When you start talking about disinformation, it seems to me that it would be very easy for them, if they wanted to use Lazar as a disinformation agent, to create a phone book that has his name in it so that it looks legitimate, so that they could build up the character around Lazar and make it look legitimate.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's entirely possible. I mean, I wouldn't want people to think that I buy into Lazar's story 100%. I don't. And even, ironically, even Lazar doesn't buy fully into his own story. What I mean by that, he said that on one occasion he was specifically and deliberately taken down one corridor where there was a glass window and there were two guys standing in front of what looked like a little figure talking to it. Now, by Lazar's own admission, he said, you know, UFO researchers have said, well, that was an alien and they've got aliens there. But Lazar came to think the more likely scenario was that it was a mind game and they were using like a small dummy. And they just pushed him past quick enough so he wouldn't see too much, but enough to where he would see this little figure. And Lazar did not buy into that. He said, "I think it was a mind game, you know, just they were playing tricks on me."
Let's pursue that in our next segment. Mind games on Bob Lazar. Nick, Gene, and Randall, you're in.
The Paracast.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Marijuana has unleashed a green gold rush across our nation. It's creating $10.8 billion in new wealth a year. And every day, it's transforming more and more Americans into millionaires. In an historic event, former Speaker of the House John Boehner reveals how you could become one of them. Join him online for the American Cannabis Summit. Attendance is 100% free, but space is limited. Join online at www.acs2018.com. This event is the first of its kind ever. John Boehner and an esteemed panel will reveal which cannabis stocks are primed to deliver life-changing windfalls in the weeks and months ahead. Plus, they will show you how to become a cannabis angel investor, backing the hottest startups before they potentially become worth billions of dollars. Join American Cannabis Summit online at acs2018.com. Attendance is free. That's acs2018.com.
Are you afraid to go to the mailbox because of letter after letter from the IRS? Are they stacking on more and more penalties and interest? By now, you know the problem won't go away on its own. Don't let the IRS chase you to your grave with penalties and interest and liens and levies. You need real help now. I'm Dan Pilla. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I help thousands of people solve tax problems they thought couldn't be solved. I can help you too. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com. Danpilla.com.
All right, crew, let's get her dug.
Honey, you want to give me a hand? I'm planting that tree, remember?
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. You must call 811 at least 2 to 3 business days before any digging project so you can avoid hitting our essential buried utilities. This includes natural gas and petroleum pipelines, electric, communication cables, and water and sewer lines. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811. Brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
Water is the single most important thing your body needs, so you want to be sure it's the purest for you and your family. For over 14 years, thousands have depended on Berkey Clean Water. The Berkey guy has you covered at home, work, and on the go with water filtration systems of every size for every budget. Now, GCN listeners receive 10% off ceramic filter systems using code GCN at GoBerkey.com or call 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Yes, that's Nick Redfern pretending he is Santa Claus. So Bob Lazar is saying that they've been playing games with him. To what purpose? Why would you puff up the sky and then play games with him?
Well, you could make a case, like I said, that there are no aliens at Area 51. There are no crashed or recovered UFOs at Area 51. But what there is highly sensitive military programs that the Russians would love to get their hands on. And so how do you do that? You fabricate UFO stories. You have people who spread the stories to the point where the Soviets are in a situation where they just cannot resist looking into it. And so they send a couple of guys out to Nevada, you know, sort of Ivan and whoever, you know, Dmitry, and they follow their activities. And what happens? Well, Dmitry and whoever gets arrested under the espionage laws and is to reel these two Russian guys in by dangling fake UFO stories. So Lazar may have been a completely unwitting figure who was groomed, and he didn't even realize he was groomed to be the person who would go public. They probably did a good character background on him. And if they thought, well, this guy is not going to be able to keep quiet, let's get him out to Area 51, expose him to a bunch of bogus documents on UFOs and aliens, maybe even mock up a UFO or two, and we know he's just going to blow the whistle. He just won't be able to resist going public, which is what he did. And so that would create or expand the legends about UFOs at Area 51, and you get the Russians coming in, they dangle something else to the Russians, and then they grab them. And all that's happened is that fabricated stories fed to Bob Lazar became public information, but no real secret was ever compromised. I think that's, you know, a potentially good scenario.
I wonder here, though, how many UFO sightings over the years, UFO-related events, were also done for the same purpose, to fool the Soviet Union? And does it happen now that we have Russia instead and Putin and all that? No, there are people in the government who actually like him.
Yeah. No, I mean, one of the reasons why Lazar has become such a controversial character is because of his history and his background. For example, we know for sure that he signed up to take a class in electronic at the Pierce College in California. And he also spent a period of time working for Fairchild. Now, according to Lazar, he obtained a Master's of Science from Caltech and a Master of Science in Physics from MIT. Those documents cannot be found anywhere. Today, you know, it's easy to delete files and destroy them, etc. Back then, when everything was paper, that would be far more difficult. That is one of the biggest weak points in the story, that no one anywhere can find any evidence of the documents created as a result of allegedly working at Caltech and MIT. But we do have documented proof that he worked in what today is called the Los Alamos Neutron Science Center out in New Mexico. And that basically is a highly classified program, which still goes on to this day. I mean, we know he worked on that particular program, and we know that he did work at Los Alamos, and all his information is in the, as I said, at the phone book, the Los Alamos phone book. So he did have these connections, and he was on the front page of the Alamos, Los Alamos Monitor newspaper in 1982. 7 years before, you know, he hit the headlines in the UFO field. A lot of people think he surfaced out of nowhere. He didn't. As I said, he was on the front page of newspapers in New Mexico in 82, you know, in relation to his jet cars that he was building and driving around at speeds of quite literally like 200 miles an hour across the desert. What I find interesting about Lazar's story is that unlike a lot of hoaxers and fakers throughout the, you know, the decades, he never wrote a book on his claimed experiences. He barely gave a handful of lectures, and the story was never altered, and it was never expanded and elaborated on. If you speak to him, he tells the exact same story. Now, if you look at someone like George Adamski, whose photographs to me are just, you know, just pure theater, you know, well, Adamski traveled all over the world lecturing, wrote numerous books, and when something died off or, you know, the story didn't sound right, he'd write another book. Lazar didn't do anything along those lines at all. The story that he tells today is exactly the same story he told back then. He's not elaborated. He's not He's hardly been on a TV show. He's never written a book. So you have to wonder, what did he get out of it? The answer really isn't much at all.
So the key is here is Lazar is not cashing in, and that lends credence to a story.
No, he gave a few lectures, and when he first came out, he gave a series of interviews to George Knapp in the local Las Vegas news company. But even then, he was sort of couched under a fake name. And it was only in 89 he decided to go public. But, as I said, I mean, when you look at people, particularly in ufology, there's so many who've had, you know, movies made about them or TV shows, or they've, you know, they've got a multi-book deal or whatever. He didn't go for any of that. He just said, well, here's the story, like it or not, you know, and he was kind of like, I don't give a damn either way, you know.
Interesting. And, of course, he came along, you know, after some of the earlier stuff that was going on at Area 51, where they did actually work on very high-tech aircraft that they wanted to keep secret from the Russians. And you talk about the U-2 and the Blackbird and the A-12 tests and stuff like that. So they've definitely got secrets out there that they've wanted to keep. And the whole area started off quite a bit smaller, was my understanding. And then they had this big land grab. Can you talk about a bit about this land grab? Did they ever get that resolved? Or what actually was going on with that?
Yeah, well, it's important to note that the Area 51 itself is actually a portion of what's called the NTNT. And it's basically like this huge area of land. Area 51 is a part of it. From the 50s onwards, a lot of research was undertaken into new and advanced aircraft, you know, things that began, you know, like the U-2 and the Blackbird, the SR-71, and then later on the stealth bomber and the stealth fighter, and a lot of other rumored aircraft, like the so-called Aurora, which is said to be, or said to have been, like this futuristic triangular-shaped thing, not unlike the black triangles that people talk about in ufology. So we know that, you know, a huge amount of stuff's been going on. But in the early to mid-1980s, the government made a land grab in the area, stating that because there were people living in the area, and or fairly close at least, and they were doing classified work there, it was going to be dangerous, you know, to national security.
More to come. Area 51 and more. Nick Redfern. Randall and Jean, you're in.
The Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
This is George Norrie from Coast to Coast AM and History Channel's Ancient Aliens. We support the amazing energy, nutrition, and skincare products from Jeunesse. Jeunesse products are designed by leading doctors in their field with natural ingredients and even stem cell technology. These products help your body perform and look better. Shop Jeunesse at GCNLife.com or call 1-844-443-6637. GCNLife.com or 844-443-6637.
Most of you know that heart disease is the number one silent killer in the U.S. What if I told you for just $54.95 a month you could fight against heart disease naturally? At Heart and Body Extract, we've been helping thousands of people get back to a healthier heart. Don't just take my word for it. Check out all of the success stories at hbextract.com. Or to order, call 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. hbextract.com. Don't risk it when you can take charge of it.
For USA Radio News, I'm Wendy King. Democrats say President Trump's insistence over a border wall amounts to a temper tantrum. The president in a tweet says the country is being threatened by a flood of immigrants.
The only thing that's going to stop that is great border security with a wall or a slat fence or whatever you want to call it. But we need a great barrier.
Lawmakers could be called back into session at any time. But for now, the Senate has adjourned without an agreement to end the partial government shutdown. Democratic Congressman Steny Hoyer tells CNN, $5 billion is too much for the wall, and he quoted President Trump's next chief of staff, Mick Mulvaney.
I think the wall is a waste of money, and as a matter of fact, Mick Mulvaney, he said he thought the president's thoughts about the wall were, and I quote, absurd and childish.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
If you owe $10,000 or more to the IRS and you cannot afford to make payments to the IRS, you may qualify for the CNC tax program. This is a new program, and if you qualify, you won't make any payments to the IRS while in this program. Once you're accepted into this program, the IRS is forced to stop all harassing collection activities. No threatening phone calls, no wage garnishments, no bank levies, and no more monthly payments to the IRS. Get ready to write this number down. It's the most important number you'll ever need to end your IRS tax nightmare. Call Paramount Tax Relief at 800-547-4804 for a free confidential consultation to find out if you qualify for the CNC tax program. Once you are accepted into the CNC tax program, you won't make any payments to the IRS while in this program. Call Paramount Tax Relief now at 800-547-4804. That's 800-547-4804. Again, 800-547-4804.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of My Pillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented My Pillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. My Pillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry My Pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose.
And here's Mike's best offer ever. My Pillow is now offering 50% off their 4-pack special plus free shipping. Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-870-0305 and use promo code GCN. That's 50% off plus free shipping. Don't delay. Order now.
Hi, this is Bryce Abel. I'm the producer of Dark Skies, the co-author of AD After Disclosure, and you are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Nick Redfern, author of thousands of books that he wrote last week on the paranormal. Seriously speaking, we've been focusing on his forthcoming book, which will be out after the first of the year, called Area 51, The Revealing Truth of UFOs, Secret Aircraft, Cover-Ups, and Conspiracies. But, of course, with all this, Area 51 does serve a legitimate purpose. They've admitted to its existence. And, obviously, the question is there stuff related to UFOs there or not?
Well, that's the big question, because for the most part, not completely, but for the most part, there really wasn't much talk at all about UFOs at Area 51 before Bob Lazar came along. You know, most people had never heard of Area 51 before Bob Lazar, never mind the UFO angle. There were a few stories from people who came forward to talk about their alleged knowledge of alien activity at Area 51, but they were very, very few and far between, and very obscure as well. There was barely anything really pre-Lazar. But what did happen between 84 and 86 was this substantial land grab. The government's justification was, well, we're testing out a lot of classified material here, including aircraft. We don't want the Russians or the Chinese or whoever, you know, sort of climbing the surrounding hills and, you know, with high-tech equipment and photographing and filming what we've got. So we need to prevent people from getting close to the base itself. And the government went along with the powers that be at Area 51. And so there was this huge land grab and people were paid off to move to new locations, you know, maybe 20 miles further down the road, you know. And for the people who went along with it, you know, they paid for all their moving and, you know, for a new home, and also, you know, quite significant monetary amounts just for moving period, you know.
But there was some opposition to that, wasn't there, though, Nick? I mean, there was a – I think they tried to fight that in court down there for quite a while.
I mean, some of the people that said went along with it and were actually quite fine, you know, with getting substantial – and I do mean substantial monetary payments. In some cases, it was quite literally millions. Now, some people went along with it and said, well, it doesn't make any difference to me if I live 200 miles further than I do now. It's still the desert. It was kind of like that. Other people did actually take it to court and, you know, very controversial court cases where people were saying, essentially, you know, our families lived here for 30, 40 years and, you know, we're being tossed out, et cetera, et cetera. And again, the government did come down on the side of Area 51, you know, and then down to the wire, basically the people crumbled and took the money. But as I said, there were a few people who did come forward and talk about cases in relation to UFOs pre-Lazar, but the stories were just very small snippets here and there. Most people hadn't heard of anything. If they'd heard of anything, it probably was the land grab. But Lazar, whether his story's true or not, there's no doubt that he was the guy who led to the association between Area 51 and UFOs. He almost did that sort of single-handedly.
It seems like the Black Triangle started showing up around that time, too. They go back to the 80s kind of thing.
There was a big wave in the 80s and 90s in Hudson Valley, New York, where people were seeing these, well, actually the 80s, early to mid-80s, not the 90s. People were seeing these flying triangle-type black-colored aircraft flying around Hudson Valley, and it's quite understandable that back then people were like, wow, these have got to be UFOs, because people hadn't even seen the stealth bomber or the stealth fighter then. J. Allen Hynek actually co-wrote a book called, I forget what it was called now, but anyway, a book all about the Hudson Valley Wave. Night Siege.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. That particular book, you know, convinced a lot of people that what was being seen was UFOs. When the stealth fighter and the stealth bomber in the late 80s were rolled out, these weird-looking, totally black aircraft, people then said, well, maybe what we're actually seeing were secret tests of the stealth aircraft, or maybe this was something even more advanced than the stealth fighter and the bomber. But if you wanted to test something like this, and in the process you spread UFO stories, most people are going to dismiss them. You know, oh, it's the weird time of year again, that kind of thing, you know. So I think sometimes highly classified aircraft have been secretly flown, but in the event that somebody might happen to see them, then they start spreading stories of aliens and little green men to steer the story away from something that's far more down to earth than it appears to be.
Right. Or somebody says, oh, I saw, you know, a UFO and, you know, it must have been aliens. And rather than steer, you know, these days you don't have to steer anybody in that direction. They just go there. So really all they need to do is just let them go there. And that's fine. The media is taking care of that for us.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I do believe that there is a 100% genuine, real, unknown UFO phenomenon, which interacts with us in very strange and odd ways. But I also believe that government's personnel, particularly people working in the fields of like counterintelligence and psychological warfare, have realized that whether or not they really know what the UFO phenomenon is, they realize that they can actually make use of it as a means to hide their activities, but also to reel in Soviet spies, to allow for the secret flights of aircraft, you know, have people think it's aliens. I think, you know, the penny probably dropped very quickly when they, you know, somebody sat around a table thinking, hey, guys, we don't know what these UFOs really are, but we sure as hell can manipulate that phenomenon as a means to freak out the Russians, to successfully fly this or that and have people think it's little green men. And maybe we can reel in a few Russian spies, all by fabricating a bunch of UFO stuff. I think that's probably what happened. There's the real UFO phenomena, and there are successful but previously unrealized experiments and programs to to confuse the truth of the UFO phenomenon for reasons that, you know, have far more to do with domestic national security and Russian issues rather than literal aliens, you know.
Do you think that might be one of the reasons that we haven't had the kind of disclosure that people are looking for? Because there is that mix of real, genuine national security interest involved in these sightings that they simply, well, look, we can't tell you about it now. We obviously couldn't tell you about it before.
Well, yeah, and I think the whole thing is so confusing because it's like, you know, truths buried within lies and lies buried within truths to where nobody seems to know what the truth is. Even by Lazar's admission, you know, he said they played with his mind so much. And, you know, he also talked about how there were times when he would go out to Area 51. He wasn't there that long, actually, like about 12 weeks or something like that. But he said that, you know, he'd go out there and then he'd fly back. And then he'd realize he couldn't remember anything that happened when he was out there. And he felt that his mind had been sort of manipulated with, you know, chemicals or whatever. So even he didn't buy into everything, or at least was open to the idea that, you know, that there was more going on. So I do think, you know, there's a major national security issue relative to UFOs, but it doesn't necessarily mean it relates to little grey guys with black eyes. A lot of it could be hangovers from the Cold War, which are still in place. I mean, the Philip Corso story, the Day After Roswell book, I do not believe that story at all, but I would be very open to the idea that Corso, as someone who worked in the Cold War in the 60s, may well have been asked to put that story out there, possibly, you know, to freak out the Russians or some equally odd and obscure situation.
Let's do our break here. More to come with Gene Randall. And Nick, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, R-O-C-K-O-I-D-S.com.
Bacon lovers, we ship free. Try our amazing bacon. No refrigeration required. Proprietary value-added packaging provides 10-year shelf life and protects the leanest, thickest, center-cut, fully cooked bacon in America today. Ready to eat right from the pouch or warm and serve. Savory and delicious. Wholesale price for your everyday use. Order today at ReadyToEatBacon.com. ReadyToEatBacon.com.
You may need this herbal tea for relief right away, so write this down. DrMillersClinic.com. If you take meds, then suffer stomach distress, constipation, indigestion, acid reflux, and bloating, and nothing else helps, get Dr. Miller's Holy Tea or Super Holy Tea, a cleansing, detoxifying herbal tea now available at great rates direct from Dr. Miller's office. Call or click 888-660-7039 or DrMillersClinic.com.
Water is the single most important thing your body needs, so you want to be sure it's the purest for you and your family. For over 14 years, thousands have depended on Berkey Clean Water. The Berkey guy has you covered at home, work, and on the go. With water filtration systems of every size for every budget, now GCN listeners receive 10% off ceramic filter systems using code GCN at GoBerkey.com or call 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com.
Pain in my neck, back, and shoulders has really gotten worse.
Relief for body pain is here with Sunny Bay Heating Pads.
Well, the last thing I want is to take another pill, so what's so good about Sunny Bay Heating Pads?
Sunny Bay Heating Pads, made by Biomed DB Design right here in the USA, come in all sizes. Our extra-large microwavable heating pad for back pain is designed to be large enough to cover your entire back. It's also perfect to wrap around your legs, knees, or shoulder and neck.
But I need to know they're good quality.
Of course. Sunny Bay heating pads and pillows are often an Amazon choice, and it's easy and most affordable when you purchase your Sunny Bay heating pads right from our website, sunshinepillows.com, or call us 253-678-1361.
Hey, a Sunny Bay heating pad
would make a great gift, right?
Yes, and they start at just $19.99, and free shipping is available. So call 253-678-1361 or shop for your Sunny Bay heating pad at sunshinepillows.com.
By now you know that wireless technology like cell phones do in fact pose dangers to the health and privacy of everyone. Blockit Pocket's wide range of products are unmatched in providing the protection you deserve. No scare tactics, just common sense. BlockitPocket.com offers quality American-made options to alleviate and eliminate these invisible dangers. Learn more at BlockitPocket.com or call 888-315-9618. BlockitPocket.com, enhancing health and privacy.
Hey, this is Marie D. Jones, the author of This Book Is From the Future, and you are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So, Philip Corso, someone with genuine credentials, comes out with this book, heavily altered or edited by Bill Burns. Was that just misdirection?
Well, I don't think Bill was any part of any, you know, was a witting play or anything like that. But what I do think, people say, well, this is a fascinating story. What I would say is rather than talk about Lazar's claims, focus on why did he actually tell that story? You know, that's one of the things that I find interesting, that this old guy who at the time was 83 when the book was published, and he died at 84, he died the year the book came out, which, whether that was due to all the stress and publicity of the book, I don't know, but that's what happened. But, I mean, one of the things, for example, is that Corso worked on, when he was a young man, on the Operation Paperclip program to bring the German scientists over to the US. Now, you know, I sometimes wonder if, you know, some of these early UFO events were actually high-tech German things. No, I'm not talking about, quote, Nazi flying saucers, but things like V2 rockets and bringing German scientists over, being working in the field of high altitude experiments on people and controversial stuff like that. He was someone who clearly knew a great deal, of course, though. I mean, maybe he was part of a program to have the Russians think that really, we really did have crashed UFOs and dead aliens, and who better than to have somebody who was well-versed in the field of things like counterintelligence? The problem is so many people in ufology, it's just the excitement factor takes over in their minds. You know, well, this is a guy from the military, an old guy, talking about dead aliens at Roswell. It's got to be true. People need to sort of take a breath and look at the issue as why the story was put out there. What would be the goal? You know, what would be the end game in terms of having people believe the story, you know, and I think the psychological aspects in many respects are far more intriguing and interesting than the story itself.
Well, let's talk about that a bit, because you're saying one of the things that they were into is intelligence gathering through ESP, parapsychological, and mind control. So we don't hear a lot about that sort of thing in connection with Area 51. You know, we know about the aircraft and the test flights and then the high-tech stuff, but this mind control and ESP, what was that about?
Well, in terms of the mind control stuff, that sort of ties in terms of the book, that ties in with Lazar's own claims. And again, in one sense, it shoots down the idea that he was just a hoaxer, because he openly admitted that some of his memories, he could not guarantee that they were correct, which, you know, I mean, if you think about it, if you're a UFO hoaxer, you know, you want to convince someone that you saw a UFO in the sky, you would say probably something along the lines of, yeah, this is what it looked like. You know, it was silver. It had a blue band and a red light on top, and it was making this strange humming noise. And I absolutely know for sure that's what it looked like. Lazar was not like that. He was like, well, things may have been done to my mind. I genuinely cannot really say for sure what happened during those periods when I cannot remember what happened. That's sort of a big leap for a hoaxer to take, you know, to actually say, well, I can't guarantee what I'm saying is correct, you know. So I think that's an important thing, and that relates to what you mentioned in terms of mind control. But one of the people I interviewed for the book said that at some point, when you had it back in the 70s, there was the expansion in things like remote viewing and psychic spying. He said that there was, at one point in the 70s, there was a program out at Area 51 that was allied to the remote viewing program. And they, according to him, their specific role was to try and remote view the latest advanced aircraft that the Russians had got, which sounds odd. But then again, everything was odd about the whole remote viewing program, you know. They even remote viewed Mars to try and find information on ancient astronauts on Mars. Now, that's not hearsay. Those files have been declassified, where the CIA tried to remote view Mars like a million years ago. And I'm not exaggerating. That's exactly what they did. They went for a time frame of a million years ago to try and find out what was going on Mars then. Again, you know, if you think that, as bizarre as the program might be, even if it would give us an inkling of an advance in terms of espionage and getting one over on the Russians, well, let's give it a try. What have we got to lose? You know, the government's got billions of dollars to throw in our direction. So what matter if they throw 20 grand for a week's work, you know? So in that sense, the idea of, you know, using remote viewers to essentially spy on Russian military installations where high-tech planes are being built, it actually doesn't sound too weird when you look at everything else that they did in relation to remote viewing.
Right. We were talking with Cheryl Costin a bit about remote viewing, and one of the things that I mentioned was that, well, they just really didn't get anything substantial out of it. Is that your experience as well, or did they actually get something useful out of the program?
Well, the information that I've sort of put together is not so much that it didn't work, period, or it hardly worked. The problem was that it couldn't be predicted when it would work. There's some cases where the remote viewer said that it absolutely did work, but the problem was not only could it not be predicted, but it couldn't be predicted on, you know, some of the most important things that they wanted answers on. So it caused a great deal of frustration. So they felt that, well, let's keep doing it, but not at the expense of the far more down-to-earth ways of having spies and wiretaps back then, you know, and phone taps and whatever. In other words, it wasn't so much, I don't think it was sort of frowned upon because it didn't work, period. It was frowned on because it could never be specifically guaranteed.
When it's too unreliable.
Too unreliable, yeah. So yeah. In that sense, they didn't stop using it. They just agreed to carry on, you know, with the old ways, and which is probably the best approach they could have taken, really. You know, it's like, you know, a situation where I guess they often use, you know, alternative ways as a means to gather data. I mean, a few years ago, the British Ministry of Defence revealed that it had had a remote viewing program in the early 2000s, and didn't come away impressed at all, and they closed it down. So, you know, sometimes government agencies do weird stuff, you know, and people think if they're doing weird stuff, that means it works and it's real. But it doesn't always mean that. It just means sometimes they're willing to go down an alternative path, but then they might just say, forget it, you know, it's just too wacky.
Well, what about this research on teleportation then? Because, you know, there's another one.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't know if you know this, but Eric Davis, who's somebody in the very well-respected scientist, Eric Davis, more than a decade ago now, was actually contracted by the Air Force to basically research the feasibility or not of telepathy. And a lot of this work was contracted by the Air Force Research Lab, the AFRL, which has its headquarters at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. Now, Eric Davis put together a really intriguing and interesting report for the Air Force, which has now been declassified under the terms of the Freedom of Information Act. And it talks about all different types of teleportation, like, you know, the stuff, the kind of thing you would see in, like, Star Trek, and you sort of thing when it would go wrong in, like, The Fly, you know. And but they also talked about in the sort of, like, disembodied transport of inanimate objects, and also things like ESP, you know, sort of teleporting thoughts and ideas, that kind of thing. So it covered a lot of area. But one of the intriguing things about all this, and the main reason why I mentioned this in the book, is because I mentioned earlier that Area 51 is based at the what's called the NTNT, and it's basically the huge area on which Area 51 sits. Now, one of the facilities there is the what's called the Nellis Range, and the that entire facility, that entire area, actually contains a small office of the AFRL, the Air Force Research Labs. Now, although Eric Davis was contracted by the AFRL, which operates the main headquarters out of Wright-Patterson, there is a small sub-office, if you like, out of the Nellis Range.
Let's talk about Area 51 and the way it's set up. In our next segment with Nick Redfern, Gene and Randall, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got, like, I guess 60 or so different items, and entails T-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast Jumbo Tote Bag, all sorts of T-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great T-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with ReputationDefender.com. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with ReputationDefender.com. Call 800-831-0771 now. That's 800-831-0771 for your free reputation analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with ReputationDefender.com. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-831-0771 to learn more. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771. Or visit ReputationDefender.com.